to the Be Ninjas podcast, where you get an all-access pass to see what happens behind the closed doors of a fast-growing global bookkeeping and financial reporting business.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Be Ninjas podcast. Today, we have Mario on the show, and Mario is also known as the Tax Guy. And on today's episode, we're going to be talking about all things US taxes. Welcome to the show, Mario.
Hello, hello. An exciting day, US taxes.
maybe more exciting for us as accountants.
But I know. To be honest, it's funny though, you know, you could be almost anywhere though, because taxes hit everybody where, you know, for some reason, everybody wants to talk to you at the cocktail party because they think you have some the secret sauce to fixing everyone's tax problem. So it is kind of interesting.
Absolutely. So let's start with a little bit about you, who you are, and your background, which has taken you to where you are now.
Sure. So obviously, I'm a US-based CPA. I have a small firm in Connecticut called Greenhouse Reardon & Company. We have 10 people, so me and one other partner, and then 8 other staff, most of which are CPAs. And, you know, we help clients all around the world with their U.S. tax problems. So whether it be structuring new business, buying an existing business, selling a business, you know, or even just tricky individual tax questions. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, been at it for a while now, probably about 10 years, and that's about it.
Before we get into the taxes side of things, I know a lot of the listeners of this show are business owners themselves or wanting to become business owners, and I always find it interesting to hear a little bit of the backstory. So how did you become a partner in this firm?
So I started actually at one of the big four firms, which, you know, there's really no end in sight there. You know, just wasn't really feeling like I was helping anybody. I've always been somewhat entrepreneurial since I was, in high school. You know, I was around when the CD burners used to come out. You know, I would burn CDs and sell them in high school, and I would buy shirts on eBay in bulk and resell them on eBay. So I was always doing something. And when this opportunity came up, I said to the person, the partner at the time, I said, well, eventually I'd like to become partner. And he said, well, you know, you'd have to really build your own business within this business, and you have the opportunity to do that. And I said, all right, well, then sign me up. So that's when I left the big firm to go to this firm. And pretty much I did exactly that. I made partner at, I don't remember, I think it was age 27. Which was the youngest in firm history. So that was a good accomplishment.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember back in my accounting days, I worked at a firm called BDO. It wasn't Big Four, but it was a large.
There you go.
Yeah. And that path of partnership, it was a long road. And 27, that's a great achievement.
Yeah, it was interesting. But yeah, it's been great though. You know, it's nice because, you know, you choose your destiny. You know, I can take on more clients if I'd like. I can fire some clients if I'd like. Or, you know, I could hire more staff. You know, I could grow, or I could fire some staff and say, well, you know what, this is enough income for me. I'll keep these clients and get rid of the rest. You know, it's just nice to control what you would like to do and work with who you want to work with.
Gives you more options to follow the path that you want. All right.
Absolutely.
We'll get into the first topic that we're going to be discussing today is sales tax. And there's been some recent changes in sales tax, which I know have created some uncertainty and a lot of questions. Before we jump into the changes, could you just describe to our listeners, especially those that might not be overly familiar with sales tax, a little bit about what it is, who it applies to, and the basics of what they need to know?
So sales tax, right? So I guess very basically, you know, if you walk into any store and if you buy any tangible personal property, so whether that be a mug or a lamp, you know, usually there's a sales tax charge for that. And then the state, you know, the business is required to collect that tax and then remit it over to the state every either month or quarter or year, depending on, you know, usually quantity of sales. So, you know, the first requirement that you would have to be subject to, or I guess to be required to charge sales tax, is this concept of nexus. So you have to have a connection to a specific state to be required to charge sales tax. So, you know, what is this connection, you know, that I speak of? So the connection can be a physical presence. So, you know, not very long ago, you used to have some sort of physical presence in a state for them to require you to charge your customer sales tax. So that could be through an employee, through ownership of property, having an office. Those are usually the things that would, you know, give you a nexus in a state. So, you know, for a lot of our online sellers, you know, this was a great thing. You know, you didn't have to deal with much sales tax because you would only have to deal with sales tax in the state where, you know, you and your team were located. And, you know, many times your team would be subcontractors and those wouldn't even count. So it would really just be where your home state was, you would have to handle sales tax. Now that's kind of, flipped around, I guess, let's say. Now being an online seller is almost worse for sales tax purposes because just very recently there was a Supreme Court decision in the United States. You could Google around the Wayfair case, Wayfair decision, Wayfair sales tax. So what ended up happening was it was either North Dakota or South Dakota said, well, you have X number of sales in our state. Now, in their case, it was $200,000 or 100 transactions, or it could be vice versa. It's either $100,000 and 200 transactions, but either way, they had a minimum threshold of sales, but they had zero physical presence in that state. The Supreme Court said, well, guess what? By having just a number of sales in this state, you now have nexus and are required to charge sales tax. So now every state is following suit. You know, not every state has done it yet, but I'm sure they will. So all states are pretty much just giving a minimum threshold of saying, well, if you have X number of sales or X dollar of sales, you now have to charge sales tax. So what does that mean? You say, well, what's the big deal, right? The company, the seller, doesn't have to pay the tax. You know, you just need to charge your customer. So in the end, you're actually paying no extra tax at all. The real problem is just compliance. Having to file reports in potentially 50 states and different rates and different localities in each state just turns into a complete headache. It's really, that's what the problem is. The problem is not charging the tax, or, you know, it doesn't really cost anybody any money. You know, customers usually can care less about paying an extra 6% sales tax. It's just the matter of, well, now I've got to collect all this money and then somehow give it out to all these states and collect the correct amount. And that's really where the issue is.
And do you have any tips for particularly these online sellers who are selling in multiple different states around how they can manage that compliance side?
So step one is really just starting to track your sales by state and being aware of these thresholds. You know, so if you're starting to hit $200,000 in sales in a specific state, it's time to start looking at what you should do for sales tax. So there are services out there. One is called TaxJar. Another is called Avatax. Those are really the only two games in town right now. And, you know, in the end, they have different levels of service. You know, some of them, they will handle everything, supposedly. Others, you know, you can use their software, which is supposed to integrate into your system and make it easier for you to handle on your own. You know, in reality, it's just a burden that has to be handled. Now, the other, you know, others just take a risk approach. You know, they say, well, I may be just barely over the threshold in these three states, but I'm definitely over the threshold in California, which happens to be an extremely aggressive state. So, well, I'll comply with California, and they make a, you know, their own business decision, you know, to pass at least for now on other states. But like I said, step one is just having a way to track your sales by state, assessing your risk, because like I was saying, it's not your tax to pay, it's just your tax to charge. So, you know, the downfall being, if you were supposed to charge it, and if you go on 10 years not charging it, well, they're still going to ask you for it if it were to, you know, come up by any particular state.
Yes, that would not be a good position to be in if you had to be charging it for 10 years.
Exactly. And that's the other problem is, again, if you haven't filed anything, the statute of limitations never begins, and they could go back basically as far as they want. So again, another good rule of thumb is always maintain your data, because how these sales tax audits work is, you know, a state would audit you and they'd say, okay, I see that you have $10 million of sales. We're going to assume they're all to my state, unless you can prove otherwise.
Right.
So always maintain your sales by state. So then you can say, well, you know, I see I have 10 million in sales, but really only 200,000 were to your state. And, you know, the rest were amongst all these other 50 states. So, you know, if you can't prove that data, you're sitting in a hot seat.
In the next part of the podcast, we're going to be talking about some different case studies. Before we move into that, are there any final tips you wanted to mention about sales tax, or any common questions that your clients ask you about sales tax?
I mean, I think we covered it pretty good. It's just, it's really just stay on top of the thresholds that are ever changing right now. And, you know, see when you start hitting the certain thresholds, and then in the end, it's just comply or, you know, pray that the government does something about it.
Yes.
Excellent. I've been doing that.
All righty. Well, we'll move into the first case study. And these are not based on being in this clients or any particular clients. I've just thought about the types of clients that we work with, and then the idea is to lead into common tax questions that may come up.
Sure.
The first one is it's an entrepreneur. They're based out of San Francisco. They're selling on Amazon. At the moment, they're not selling on their own platform, but they intend to in the future. And really, they're just getting started. So they've opened some bank accounts and really they've found their product to sell. They've just got started on Amazon, and that's about it. Where would you start with them, and what would your advice be to them?
So, in the end, just starting, in my personal opinion, is simpler is always better, right? So what I would probably recommend to them is they start their single member LLC, or if it's two partners, you make it a partnership LLC. From there, you know, obviously is getting your accounting system up. You know, so you'd probably call Merrill at Bean Ninjas, right? Little plug. No, but really though, you know, you have to get an accounting system in place. You know, if you're an Amazon seller, it's really just knowing your inventory. And from there, right, it's like, well, the classic question I get is, you know, how do I save taxes? How do I save taxes? How do I save taxes? Well, in truth, when you're starting out, the best way to save taxes is having, it's really good bookkeeping and good processes. So what I mean by that is, good processes are, okay, I have my business bank account and I've got one business credit card or two business credit cards, however many you have, one or two, you know, don't go crazy and have 100. All of my business expenses are on these cards or this bank account, and all my business income comes in that business bank account. You know, I don't have 14 personal cards saying, oh yeah, you know, at the end of the year, I'm going to remember that I paid for that with my personal card. I'm going to somehow sift through my 40 personal transactions and pick that deduction out. It just doesn't happen, because guess what? You're running a business all day and you don't have 2 weeks to sift through 12 months of your personal bank statements and personal credit cards to find all the business transactions that you had on those cards. It just doesn't happen. So step one to saving taxes when you're starting are having those processes, because just by the fact of having them in a single statement, even if you don't use accounting software, at the end of the year, half of it is there done for you just with the statements. You know, you have, there's all your expenses and there's all your income. Now you just need to categorize it. And almost anybody can help you do that. You know, and then eventually, once you start growing a little bit, you can then start utilizing these accounting softwares like Xero or QuickBooks Online that'll suck in all these transactions and, again, help you balance things, reconcile things, and, you know, really start giving you some kind of business intelligence to what your business looks like to run reports. That's really step one for the guy that's just starting out, just has a, you know, just has a product. In my personal opinion, you get those basics done of having those separation and start worrying about sales first, you know, and then a little bit down the line, then start saying, all right, now I got to get some really good accounting going on.
Yep, great. And if we continue with this case study and we just move, there are a couple of years on now. So sales have really ramped up on Amazon. They've also created their own brand on Shopify. And now, originally there was one business owner, but he's brought on a partner who's great at marketing to really help him grow the brand. Would there be any different considerations now that revenue is much higher and there's an additional business partner?
Absolutely. So, you know, at this point, right, is you're, you know, you're growing, again, being Amazon business, inventory kind of being your big, how would you explain it? You know, it's kind of your big cash flow problem is inventory. So once you hit a certain level, you really should get a good accounting system going. So, you know, well, in October or November, I better make my order so I have all of my inventory in by, you know, whenever in December that I need it, because that's when I make most of my sales. And the only way you know when you make most of your sales is by looking at historical data in your accounting system. So sifting through bank statements is not enough at that point in time. You know, you want to be able to run reports on certain times of the year to see where your sales are. Also to see where your cash position is, right? Because, you know, just because you have a lot of sales in November, December, doesn't mean you have enough cash to buy the inventory you need to make those sales, which might mean months in advance, you might have to say, all right, you know, we got to find a credit facility. You know, how are we going to buy all the inventory we are projecting to need? Well, we may need to start applying for loans and lines of credit. And once you hit that level, you know, sending your Excel spreadsheet to the bank, it's just not really.
It's not a good look.
Yeah. You know, it's just not going to work. So you need the accounting system at that point in time. And then, of course, it comes to tax savings. You know, everybody, you know, nobody wants to pay taxes. Nobody wants to pay taxes. So, you know, on the bright side, under the new Trump law, the tax rates have went way down, especially for business owners. A lot of my Amazon businesses are considering C Corps now. Even, you know, they used to never consider these in the past just because the rate there is 21% flat. So again, a business where a lot of your money is tied in inventory, that rate is pretty attractive. But really, what most are still sticking to is pass-through entities, mostly an S-corp, that is going to qualify now for what's called QBI or qualified business income deduction.
Just to go back and just explain with an S-corp what you mean by the pass-through.
Sure. So there's two ways your business entity will essentially be taxed. So one is the corporate form, so C corporate form, which is basically saying, okay, our entity is being taxed one time flat at 21%. Done. Now, but all that money is still sitting in the corporation. So to get that money to the interested people, so to the shareholders, there's really only two ways to get it there. One is through payroll, which would be a deduction to the company, and then it would then reduce, you know, the tax burden of the company. But of course, now you have a tax burden at the personal level. Or the second way is you pay a dividend, which would not be a deduction to the company. So you would end up paying the 21% rate plus the dividend rate on at the personal level. So, you know, just to talk a little bit about rates, you know, so you'd be paying 21% at corporate plus the dividend rate is anywhere between 15 and 23.8%. So, again, generally speaking, you know, it's a little bit different between married and single, but pretty much